Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better with new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect. The fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Today we're talking to John Fogle. He has so much wisdom. We're going to talk about sibling dynamics, about why he doesn't like gentle parenting as a term, and also about punishment-free parenting, but how punishment is different than consequences. This is also someone that my husband Chris followed way before I even came across him, and he's just so relatable, approachable, and his info and tips on parenting are really fantastic and easy to digest. So let's get right to it. Your wife is so nice to just remove your children from your home while you're doing a recording.
It really is. And I'm also recording a course today for the Parent Lab, which is my online membership. And so I'm recording a course today. So she was like, do the podcast, do the recording, get it all done, and then watch the kids. And I was like, I love that. Love that.
What are you recording today? What course are you recording?
It's a course that's actually based on a workshop that I already have inside Parent Lab, which is called How to Get Your Partner on Board. So it's a course for ideally couples to watch, where one partner maybe doesn't do the emotional responsiveness, maybe doesn't do the, let's call it gentle parenting, authoritative parenting. They might be a more traditional parent. And then you have a partner who maybe has drank the Kool-Aid, as they say, and who's fully on board with the stuff that I talk about in my books. And I have found a ton of success inside Parent Lab of getting, especially men who tend to be the ones who are the later adopters, in on that with me. And so I ballooned it out. I did it as one of my early workshops probably 2.5 years ago. And I've gotten so much positive feedback on the framework that I use for couples, because I've also done couples counseling for years, that I got so much positive feedback that I was like, I got to make this into a full 9-module, 10-module thing. And so that's what I'm working on today.
That's so smart. I mean, it's also really smart, I feel like, since you're a man, to be able to be talking about this, because I will say, so you and I were introduced by a mutual friend, and I'm so grateful. And then I went and looked everything up that you're doing, and you're one of the only people and accounts in the space of parenting, because I'm constantly watching videos, listening to podcasts, reading about parenting advice, and you are the first person and account that my husband followed before me and has been following for a long time, way before I even was informed of everything that you're doing. So then instantly, when I came across your account and already saw that Chris is following you, I was like, I need to dive deeper into this. And then I'm like looking it up, and it makes so much sense to me why he's following you, because you speak in such a amazing and also non-judgmental and informative way that's really straight to the point and easy to digest. And also, then when we were messaging, you said majority of your following is male and 100% of the people that you talk to are men, right?
All my one-on-one clients, yeah. So all my one-on-one clients are men. A majority of my following is not male. Only 25% of my following is male. But when you compare that to other parenting creators in the space, and so another person who's been on your podcast, Eli Harwood, is one of my very close friends. We actually started on TikTok in the same month. So we started on TikTok in February of 2022. Neither of us had an Instagram account at the time. And so it's just random that we both started the same month. And our path has basically exactly tracked. If you look her up today, one of us has more followers than the other. I don't know which one it is. It's going to be within 20,000. It always is. And so we have perfectly tracked with each other. But she, I think, has 95 to 97% are women. And so the fact that I have 70, at its different times, it's been 70 to 75% women. That's crazy, because that means I have 20 to 25% men, or 30 to 25% men. That's nuts numbers in this space, because men don't talk about this stuff. And I think it is because of how I speak about it. I think that's a big piece of it. It's also just because we've known this for years in psychology. Women are much better at listening to women and men. Men just have this inbuilt thing where it's really hard to listen to women. And I have had to really deconstruct that, because so many of the voices in this space are female. They're moms. And so all of my mentors, Tina Payne Bryson is a friend of mine. She wrote The Whole Brain Child. She's my mentor. These are the people who are the experts. Elaine Maslisch and Adele Faber, who wrote How to Talk So Kids Can Listen, Listen So Kids Will Talk. Those are my mentors, and they're all women. And so I've had to learn that, but some people have not gotten to that point where they can listen to women tell them these messages. And if I can just be a vessel for that good news, then I'm going to do that. It's kind of what I do in all aspects of my life.
But you mentioned you started on TikTok in 2022. I mean, obviously you did something in a different way because there are some men who are in that the similar space or may have tried to be in a similar space. But obviously the way that you launched yourself on TikTok and then also the way that you speak, which I think some of that, when I found out that you also work in a church and you're a pastor, like that, the way that you speak and the cadence in which you speak is also similar. So I think that helps with how you connect with people. But what do you think that it really was that took you to the next level and even made you want to start, like, oh, I'm going to talk about dad advice and parenting advice on TikTok? Because that's not a, it's like most people were talking about beauty and fashion on TikTok.
Totally. I mean, in 2022, it was dance videos. I would guess that the top 20 or 30 views in 2022 via views, like this is Charlie D'Amelio mania, is 2022. So really what it came to with me was the first thing I talked about on TikTok was actually religion. And that went really well very quickly. And I wound up pivoting off of that because there's so many people who talk about that. And I was not helping people in the same way that I can help people with parenting. But really, it comes down to, it's a very simple story, which is a bunch of things happened in my life at the same time. And when my son was born in 2016, my dad was diagnosed with cancer and passed away in a year. My son was born and was turning one around the same time my dad died of cancer. We became licensed foster parents. And I was a chaplain in a hospital and in seminary at the same time. So all of this stuff is happening at the same time. And the Cubs won the World Series, which was actually probably one of the most significant parts of that for me because I'm born and raised in Chicago. But lots of big changes in my life at that time. And one of the major changes was that I started to think differently about parenting, because when you lose a parent, it makes you question everything. And then also when you become a parent, it makes you question everything. And I happened to be questioning everything while I was in the midst of a research-based program that did master's degree level counseling as part of it. I was really grateful to my seminary that they brought in staff from the professional counseling school to actually teach us how to talk to parents in our churches and do things like that. And so I was taking master's degree level counseling courses that I didn't plan on taking. I just wanted to be a pastor. But I was getting all of this good advice. And the most important thing above all of those was that I was learning how to research. And if people who don't know how to research yet, that is the hardest thing to learn. It also opens up the world. People say, I did my own research. What they mean is they went on Instagram or they like look something up on Google. Like, I'm reading academic papers and I'm becoming friends with some of the leaders in the field, some of the people who we've already mentioned. And I was like, all right, this is just helping me parent better. I was not out here trying to save the world or tell anybody else how to do what they were going to do. I was an emotionally reactive parent. I all of a sudden, my kid turns 18 months and he was a super early talker. I'm feeling like I got a toddler and he's only 18 months old. So his brain's only 18 months, but he talks like a toddler. And I'm like, why do I sometimes feel like I just want to pick this kid up and throw him if he doesn't listen to me? What is that in me? And why do I scream at him when I'm actually just hungry? These things that he does, why are these so triggering? My wife does this stuff. It doesn't bother me the same way. Some random people at my church do this stuff. It doesn't bother me the same way. People in the hospital do this stuff. It doesn't bother me. But when it's my kid, it really bugs me. And so in the process, I was like, man, I got to learn everything that I possibly can about parenting because this is so interesting to me. And I have ADHD and I went hyperfixate crazy on parenting stuff. And I became basically like a self-taught master's degree in developmental psychology. Now I'm getting my PhD in developmental psychology. And I can tell you everything that I've learned so far, I already knew from my own personal deep dives. So I gave myself the equivalent of a master's degree in developmental psych. And then I'm just using all this stuff with my kid out in public. And as it happens, I married my high school sweetheart. We were 21 and 23 when we got married. So we had kids pretty young. So all of my other friends start having kids. And now my kid, this is a couple years down the road, is like 3 or 4. And so they're asking me, okay, well, you're the pro because you've had a kid. What do I do when this happens? What do I do when my kid's melting down at the grocery store? What do I do when this? And I'm like, oh, I got a great hack for that. Bop, 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 child development, neuroscience, all this stuff. And they're like, I did it, John, and it worked perfectly. So what book did you read this? I'm like, well, it's kind of a combination of these 4 different books. And they're like, no, you need to talk about this. And so I was already doing a couple of videos here and there about religion and Christianity. And I just showed up one day and said, I'm just going to be a dad who posts about evidence-based parenting content, the stuff I already knew from my own journey. And within 2 months, I had 200,000 followers on TikTok. And by probably took a lot longer on Instagram, but then over, I made some videos around Halloween, 2022, probably, so the same year. And over Halloween weekend, it was like 4 days because of where Halloween fell that year. I got 200,000 followers in four days on Instagram. And I went, oh, I guess this is legit. And then from there, I wrote my book, which is called Punishment-Free Parenting. I've since written a children's book with my wife, who's a brilliant artist. And it's kind of all gone from there. I launched Parent Lab, which is my online membership. But all of these things are all around the idea that I had to learn it first for me. And I think that's a big piece, is that so many men especially, but really all parents, they want to relate to somebody who's been through that journey. They don't want to relate to somebody who's just like, oh yeah, well, I got my medical degree when I was 20. I look at lots of the parenting people out in the space, they're like, yeah, I had my PhD in developmental psych at 23 before I ever had kids. And it's like, they never struggled like I struggled. I learned this stuff for my own survival. And that was a big difference because, and my training is in how to take the Bible is incredibly complicated. It's in how to take very complicated things and give it to people in a way that they can actually do something with. And I think that that matters. I think the gap between what the research says and how people actually interpret that and can use it in the grocery store, that's a huge chasm. And so that's what I've stepped into.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woohoo! Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
So when you go back to when things started to really go crazy for you, was there a video or a subject that you talked about that you were like, oh, this is the one that's being sent around that has done it for me?
I mean, on Instagram, there was one video that got me 130,000 followers.
And what was that talking about?
Yeah, that it didn't even have that many views in comparison. It was, I think it was 1 out of 9 people who saw the video followed me. Think about that in those terms. But then a lot of that is also that once they saw that one video, then they went to the account and they saw, oh, he talks about this stuff all the time. And that was a video about how kids' brains develop with language in a different way than most of us understand. And so the way that kids interpret language when we're talking to them is that they pick out verbs before they pick out anything else. So they listen to the action words that we're using. So if we say, stop running, they don't hear the qualifying stop. They just hear running and then they keep running because we've just said running. So what's better is to say, walk, please, or use your walking feet or feet on the floor if they're jumping or climbing on something. And this works with their brain instead of against their brain. They're not trying to disobey you. They just are catching up. They're moving backwards. And the way that English works, because we say our verbs later in the sentence, they wind up kind of listening to our sentence backwards. And then it gets in trouble. And then it's interesting because language shapes the way that we learn in other cultures, in other languages where they use different framing. Kids don't behave the same way. And so I took that, again, this is like my research into the Bible and how language changes the way, like the Bible is an interpreted and translated document. It's like, how do you do that? Plus the neuroscience of how brains develop, plus the psychology of how we can get people to actually follow our instructions. And you marry those things together and you do it in 59 seconds. And parents were like, all right, that I can do. If you yell at your kids, you're probably damaging their brain. That video might get a lot of views, but that doesn't make anybody feel good. But hey, your kid won't walk at the pool. Stop screaming. Stop running. Just say, walk, please. And you'll see a change instantly. And many parents tried it. And that's what I always encourage people to do. I don't want you to buy anything from me before you try my stuff. Because if you try my stuff, then you're gonna be a believer. Because it's not my stuff. It's just neuroscience and developmental psych. It's just how it works.
But it's also, I think it's that coupled with very simple and straightforward instructions. Because I think that that's when I get it in my own marriage, like when I get with Chris and I talk about the science behind something, I think he, for him, he's like, I just want to know what
to do. Give me the script.
Yeah. And I think that to me, when I see your videos and I see the way that you talk, it makes sense that men, and I love men and I love the way that their brains work. And I look at my friends, like all my girlfriends' husbands, and they want the same thing. They just want to be like, how can I relate to my child and get them to do what I'm trying to get them to do in a very simple and straightforward way? And I think that that's what you're providing in your videos and in your content.
Here's the actionable thing. You know what's interesting? I think men have to see it work, in my experience, before they care how it works. And that's been the thing of a greatly disproportionate number of people who actually, again, 100% of my one-on-one clients, and a hugely disproportionate number of people who are in Parent Lab are either couples or men. And the reason why is because once they know that it works, then they're really interested in learning how it works. That's fine. But until you know how it works, or until you know that it works, you're kind of like, well, I don't really care how something that doesn't work for me works. Right? And that's the thing, is that once they see it work practically, once they see how do you do consequences effectively without discipline, without damage, right? How do you do this, not letting your kid just walk all over you, but also implementing consequences that stick? Once you know that, then you're like, okay, now I'm interested. Now I'll read your book. Now I'll like learn more. I think that that's a powerful tool to show. Instead of telling somebody that it works, show them that it works. And then they're going to be way more receptive to learning.
Which is interesting, because for me, when I'm looking up parenting information, of course, I want to know that it works, but also I look at the, why is this going to work? What is going to be going on in their little brains or their bodies? And it makes sense when you're saying, for most men, they want to know that it works, and then after the fact, how it works. I want to talk about the consequence or punishment world, because since I've been doing these interviews and since I've been a parent, there's been so many different things that have come up as being popular or trends that people are interested in with parenting, whether it is the gentle parenting or the, as some call it, soft parenting, or if it's mindful parenting, whatever the parenting trends are of the moment. But the big one that you are talking about and focusing on, of course, in your book and also what you talk about, is punishment-free parenting. Can you walk me through that? Because for some, that's like, what does that even mean? And how is that okay?
Well, it's a term that I came up with because I don't like the term gentle parenting. And the reason I don't like the term gentle parenting is because gentle parenting means to everybody, it's a fake term. It doesn't actually have a meaning that's established. No researcher, no paper I've ever read talks about gentle parenting. There's one person who came up with this idea, and then a bunch of people, Sarah Ockwell Smith, and she came up with this term, and then a bunch of people said, oh, that's what, it's authoritative parenting, but it's hard because in the way that the academic literature talks about parenting, authoritarian and authoritative are two different types. And then people go, well, like literally, I was talking to somebody with over 3 million followers, a parenting account, and they flipped them when they were talking to me. When the leading people and the leading voices flip these, It's really hard to communicate that again in 59 seconds or something to somebody. I don't think it matters what you call it, but the reason why I called it punishment-free parenting was because I wanted to kind of flip on people that a lot of the ways in which we think discipline functions actually work against our kids' brains. And so if we could ditch punishment, we could actually from that, basically punishment is the default in the way in which most of us were parented. It is the way in which most of us believe that we should parent. And so if I can take away the default, then we have a clean slate to work with. And so in punishment-free parenting, I wrote a book called Punishment-Free Parenting. There's only one chapter that talks about punishment. It's the first chapter in the book, Why Punishment Fails. And then for the next, whatever it is, 12 chapters of the book, which are really more like 9 chapters of the book because the last 5 are really short. For the rest of the book, it just talks about what the alternative is. And that was really, really important to me. And the thing is, most of us have the same goals for our kids, whether we think that the way to achieve those goals is punishment or not. If you sit down with Chris, and I say this to every single couple that I work with. If you sit down with Chris and we say, what do we want for our kid at 25, 35, 45? Most likely, total agreement. How do we get to 35, 45-year-old version of our kids? Massive chasm between you. And so understanding that we have to start with the end in mind, the goal that we're trying to get to. And if we can start there, and I can teach you why punishment doesn't achieve that goal, it just gets in the way, then all of our other inconsistencies and conflicts and what we should do this or which boundaries do we need to hold more firmly or how do we give freedom and all these things, all that stuff becomes a completely different conversation. But what happens with most parents is they go, okay, I'm going to parent differently, but I'm not deconstructing punishment as a tool. That's just going to be one of the tools in my toolkit. I'm going to keep it in my back pocket. But then when they're triggered around their kids, the only tool they know to reach for is that one. And so I have to take it out of your tool belt. I have to say, you cannot do this one, because if you can do this, the second that you're dysregulated, the second that you're overwhelmed, the second that your brain throws you back into your childhood, you're going to reach for that tool. And that's the tool that doesn't work. So let's take that tool, let's put it off to the side. It really is brain-based parenting. That's really what I should have called the book. That's the subtitle, The Brain-Based Way to Raise Kids Without Raising Your Voice. That is what I'm teaching. But the only way to get there is to take the tool that everybody uses, that everybody thinks is the only tool, take it, put it in its rightful place, which is, this never worked. This has never worked in history. This doesn't work with adults. It doesn't work with kids. We know this. There's massive amounts of research on this. And that was what foster care training actually taught me above everything else. The one part of the story that I didn't mention is that the real moment, if there's one moment, it was when I was with a foster care trainer who had done 30 different foster kids. She had fostered 30 kids, the kids who are the absolute most difficult kids to parent to raise. These are the kids with behavioral problems. Most of them wind up in juvie or homeless. Like this, these are the kids, and I thought at the time, these kids need authoritarian discipline. They need punishment. They need to be taught who's boss. Otherwise, they're going to go astray. They're going to wander from the way. And the thing that she said was, punishment probably is fine for all the kids with secure relationships and stuff. They'll be okay no matter what. But these kids who don't have that, you can't use ineffective tools like punishment. And I was like, what do you mean punishment's an ineffective? Like, I thought that was the only tool. And so that's what started me really on that path. So that's why I call it punishment-free parenting. That was a really long explanation, but you have to remove that tool first. Otherwise, people are going to keep reaching for it.
Yo, it's Jay Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer, SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win. Let's Chumba.
Yeah. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Thank you.
So removing the tool that you're talking about is removing punishment from your vocabulary or your default as a parent overall. Now, what is the big difference between punishment and consequences?
Yeah, the problem is in the 90s, we used these interchangeably and euphemistically, right? Like smart, educated parents in the 90s started calling punishments consequences, and it got very confusing. So the difference between a punishment and a consequence is the goal, what the goal of the action is. A consequence is designed to teach a child the natural outcomes of a given behavior. So, for example, my kids, this was maybe a week ago, my four-year-old decided he wanted to make pancakes and didn't tell anybody that he wanted to make pancakes. And so I come into the kitchen and it looks like somebody has taken a water balloon full of flour and just dropped it on the floor. I mean, it's just the flour is everywhere. Places I couldn't eat, like there are places in my kitchen that I have not cleaned in years that had flour all over them. And in that moment, punishment is basically looking at that situation and going, how can I either scare, hurt, shame, whatever, this kid so that he doesn't want to do that thing again? How can I make him not want to do this so that he doesn't do this and cause me a problem? Consequences is, how can I show my child that this was a bad idea? And it's not because somebody's going to get mad at you, because here's the thing, no adult in their adulthood is punished. We don't do this to adults, and yet we fully appreciate that adult, well, I shouldn't say that, we do punish people. It's called incarceration, right? Like we lock people up in jail or in prison, but we don't punish adults for petty things like this. And yet, I don't know adults who just drop bombs of flour all over their kitchen. Why? Because they know they're going to have to clean it up. And so cleaning up the whole kitchen with me was a consequence. It was the consequence that comes from making a mess. When you make a mess, you have to learn to clean it up. That's different than what a lot of people assume gentle parenting is, which is, oh, sweetie, you know that you shouldn't play with flour. Okay, go play with your toys and mommy will clean this up for you.
So that's the gentle parenting.
Well, it's whatever you want to call it. It's permissive parenting is the technical term, right? But that is what people assume gentle parenting is. While other people assume that gentle parenting is having the child clean up the mess with you. Again, this is why I don't like the term. You can have two people saying, these are both gentle parenting. Well, then I don't like the word. What I say is, it's not a punishment if you're helping the child go through these things. And so I have an acronym. Actually, I think this is the video that Chris followed me off of. I have an acronym, WRAP, that works for consequences. This was a workshop that I ran. It's also in my book. W means warranted. First step is that in a consequence scenario, 90% of the time, literally 9 out of 10 times, a consequence is not warranted, meaning likely the child has already experienced the consequence. So they're playing at the park and they push a kid and the kid falls down and doesn't want to play with them anymore. The consequence is that they have to stop playing with that kid. That's the consequence. You don't have to add anything to it. You no longer have that playmate. They don't want to play with you. That's the consequence. So 9 out of 10 times, you don't even have to give your kid a consequence. They've already experienced the consequence. The consequence was a relational rupture. The consequence was you broke that toy and now the toy is gone. The consequence has been done. So is a consequence even warranted? 9 out of 10 times, probably not. R is either, I used to say it's reasonable, but really it means regulated. You cannot give effective consequences if you're triggered. A child cannot receive consequences if they're triggered. And by the way, the reason why punishment is so ineffective is because the way in which we punish turns off the part of our child's brain that learns. So when you yell at your kid, the part of their brain that learns shuts down. You've literally said, okay, I want you to learn a lesson, but the way I'm teaching you turns off your brain. That's obviously never going to work. So WR is make sure that they're regulated. A is that every consequence has to be associated to the thing that happened, right? So if you're trying to do a consequence that's not directly associated to whatever they did, the misbehavior or the problematic thing that happened or the mess they made, a child's brain can't connect those in the way that you think that it can. Adults, you don't really have to associate the consequence as much. The adult brains can kind of extrapolate, right? Like I said that thing and my wife doesn't like me right now. I can figure out what that consequence really is, right? But for kids, it's harder for them, that linear thinking. And then P is every consequence has to be proportional. And if there are punishment-oriented parents on this, listening to this right now, or any parent who's like, yeah, this soft parenting, gentle parenting is too soft. When I say proportional, I mean in both directions. would it be proportional for my son to clean the kitchen every day for a month because he made a mess with flour? No. Would it be proportional that he just had to sweep up one little tiny scrap of the flour and throw it away and then go play while I did the rest of the cleaning? Also, no. But consequences have to be proportional to the thing that occurred. And one of the great myths in Western society is that the harsher the punishment, the less likely a person is to commit the crime. And what we know from decades of research in adults and children, by the way, is that the harshness of a punishment has no bearing whatsoever on the likelihood for a person to commit that crime. All that matters is whether or not that person thinks they're going to be caught. And this is the fundamental problem with punishment at the core. Punishment causes kids to hide bad behavior. Consequences cause kids to learn from bad behavior. That's a big, big difference. And most people on that are going to listen to this are going to go, I want my kid to learn from their bad behavior and their consequences. I don't want my kids to hide their bad behavior.
I when you're saying that, I was just thinking of my, I have one of my daughters. I was trying to explain to them when you're saying hiding bad behavior, the importance of always telling the truth. And if they tell the truth, that they won't get in trouble, but that lying is never okay to do. And so trying to teach the idea of telling the truth to children is also interesting because you're explaining it. And then as a parent, you're like, how do I explain this in a way that's going to be easy to digest in their age group? And my daughter came to me yesterday and she was talking about trying to teach my one-year-old about lying, which he hasn't gotten there yet. But she said, one time I did not tell the truth to mommy. I threw my gummy vitamin in the trash and I told her that I ate the vitamin. But then I came to her and I said, I really threw my vitamin in the trash, mommy. I did not take my vitamin. And then I didn't get in trouble. And that's when you tell mommy the truth. Okay. Like she's telling, like you can see that she's processing what she's learning by regurgitating it to my one-year-old. Yeah. So that's always, it's interesting to see those moments as parents. And then when you're talking about this is something Chris and I talk about all the time. As a parent, your instinct in the moment, if one child hits another child, is in the moment to explain before you learn everything that you're talking about, why it's not okay to hit somebody. And then you learn, okay, their lid is flipped. They're not going to absorb any information. We circle back to this at a later time. And I remember when Chris and I first started talking about that, Chris was like, well, how does that make any sense? Is this what gentle parenting is? Are we just not going to teach them why? And then you understand, oh, okay, you want them to actually listen to what you're saying. So we're going to circle back when everybody's calm, including you as parents. Because I think for parenting especially, and I'm sure this is makes sense for you, I personally do really well with parenting things when someone gives me a script or role plays with situations that come up. So like, for example, when you're talking about this, the difference with having punishment-free parenting, but also being mindful of consequences or appropriate actions to take after something happens with your child, whether it's hitting, biting, pushing, if it's not at a park and it's at home. This is going to segue into siblings because
right, yeah,
you're specializing in siblings. This is your space now. And also it's something that all of my friends, when your kid gets old enough to walk around and you have another child, the sibling dynamic takes a new turn.
Right. And punishing kids, like there's an actually added thing. So I am writing a book about siblings now, and that'll come out probably in a year and a half or maybe a year. One of the things I talk about in that is that punishment creates a rift between you and your child where what you were just explaining, right? Your daughter saying, hey, I threw my gummy vitamin in the trash. That may seem to many of the people listening like, oh, that's a cute moment. That's like an Instagram story moment. That's like, to me, I hear that and I go, that kid at 16 is in a situation where they're at a party that maybe they weren't supposed to be at, or they're getting into a physical relationship with somebody and they're maybe it's going further than they want it to go. That gummy vitamin is the framework, or what we call the model, that they're using to think about how to bring that or not bring that to their parents. And so, yeah, it's cute and it's silly when they're little, but actually think about, like, do I want my kid to call me first when they're at that party? Or do I want them to say, I'm probably going to get screamed at. I'm probably going to get punished. I'm probably going to get grounded for a year. I'm probably going to, like, all this stuff. I don't feel that bad. I could probably drive home. And that, a lot of people go, oh, well, like, this is a nice thing. Like, this is a nice new gentle parenting thing. It's like, no, we have decades of research that the kids who wind up in these horrible situations feel often like it's because they didn't know that they could go to their parents. And every one of those parents is going, I wouldn't have punished you if you called me. But unless you do it when they're 3 and 5 and 7 and 10, they are not going to trust you to do it when they're 16. That's not how their brain works. And so that's the first thing. The added thing with siblings now, and I'll walk you through the script exactly, but the added thing with siblings is that a child will never blame a parent in their internal psyche because they know that they rely on you. This is like a key evolutionary thing with attachment theory. Attachment theory is born out of evolutionary psychology. People don't know that. The reason why attachment theory is born out of evolutionary psychology is because children need to know that they are secure with their adults. Otherwise, they won't survive. And so when you have a sibling go and punch another sibling in the head, and then you walk over to the sibling who just did the punching and you go, that is not okay. And obviously they didn't punch them because they're just like, nothing was going wrong. I mean, they're already dysregulated. They're already upset. And now you're just going to go, I can't believe you just did that. I'm so ashamed of you for doing that. I'm so disappointed that you made that choice, or you really hurt her and that's really bad. All you're doing is making them look at their sibling and go, your existence is why I'm now in danger of losing my caregivers. So that is what drives most sibling rivalry.
Jeez Louise, that is deep.
They look at their sibling and they go, there's a great book written in the 80s. I almost never tell people to read parenting books written in the 80s. But there is the reason I'm writing the new siblings book is because the best book on siblings was written in the 80s by the people who wrote How to Talk So Your Kids Will Listen, Listen So Your Kids Will Talk, Elaine Maslisch and Adele Faber. And in their book, they are interviewing adult siblings who have no contact. They don't talk, nothing. And they're getting them, in certain cases, they'll go and they'll meet and they'll say, well, why are you? So, you know, when we were growing up, you were always mom's favorite. Why do you hate me? Or when we were growing up, you bullied me. Why do you hate me when you were the one bullying me? And they're like, because you were mom's favorite. How do you know that I was mom's favorite? I could tell because she punished me for hurting you. Where did that, like, obviously that's not what that means, but to an underdeveloped brain, that's how they interpret it. So the hack here, it's not exactly a script, but the hack here is when one child hurts another child, remember always that attention is currency to children. Affection is currency. What that is meant for a lot of authoritarian parenting is I'm going to withhold attention and withhold affection. But you can use it the other way. When your child punches their sibling, instead of just effectively ignore the kid who just hit. Make a beeline for the kid who just got hit. Hold him in your arms and say, getting hit hurts so bad. That's not okay. I'm so sorry that that happened to you. And now your child is now, instead of seeing you model when you get in trouble, mom yells at me, mom punishes me, I hate my sibling. Now they see, oh, when somebody gets hurt, you go towards them. When someone is hurting, you try and help them. And now they've completely shifted their mindset. That child's dysregulated. You're not doing any good anyway. So this is where a lot of parents go, like Chris said, what do you mean? We're just going to do nothing? No, I'm not telling you don't do anything. I'm saying prioritize connection and repair for the first child who got hurt first. And by the time you're done with that, now that other child's probably, number one, they've already had time to think about their actions. They've already had time to think about, well, phew, I shouldn't have done that. Look at how mom is reacting. She really has to help my little brother. She really has to help my little sister. That must have been pretty rough. Again, no consequence needed. The consequence you just witnessed. Now you go back and you go, yeah. And when you hit somebody, that really hurts them. You want to talk about it? Totally different scenario. Now that kid's regulated. Yeah, well, you know, they took this or they're doing this and I didn't like that. Yeah, you didn't like it. Repeat back to them what they said. You didn't like that at all. I get that. I wouldn't like if somebody did that to me either. This is what I would do. What do you think you can do next time? And now you're always playing for next time. That's the other thing. Consequences are always about preventing in the future, preventing that, changing the way a child thinks about a scenario so that they make a different choice, which, by the way, it's always going to be up to them to make that choice. You're never going to be able to punish them harshly enough that they'll make good choices. All the people, not all, the overwhelming majority of people who are on death row were beat as children for their crimes that they committed to their siblings. So did it work? I don't think so. They obviously didn't learn the lesson. Versus all of these studies, there's a study out of Harvard that looked 75 years, longitudinal study, not only parents, but grandparents, grandchildren. The parents who did the stuff that we're talking about, prioritized repair, went to the kid who was hurting rather than punishing the perpetrator. That stuff led to siblings who got along better in the moment, but also siblings who got along for the rest of their life and then raised kids who had siblings who got along. And so nobody goes no contact with their parent because they were too loving. That is the crux of all of this, is to understand that effective discipline ultimately is about having a child be self-disciplined. You want to work yourself out of a job. And the only way to do that effectively is to prioritize this way of engaging in these moments.
I mean, it's just ignited a whole other subject matter of like that we need to do an entire separate interview on, which is just the sibling dynamic is just, I mean, I'm incredibly close to my siblings. I talked to my sister already twice today and it's not even 10 o'clock. Both of my brothers I'm constantly talking to and constantly like, you know, just I love being around my siblings. And I think that there are certain things that you're saying that are just like when I was growing up, the time of how parents were parenting. And there are certain things that I reflect on, like how my parents raised us. And I'm like, I want to do so much the same. And then there are certain things that you're talking about of just sibling dynamic of the repair angle or the, there's just so much there. We have to do another whole other conversation on just siblings now that we've dove into this.
And kids are anti-fragile. I think this is another thing that the third video I ever made on Whole Parent was why I hate the term gentle parenting, and it had nothing to do with anything we've talked about today. It has to do with being a guy and going, we don't live in a gentle world. There is a visceral reaction. But number one thing, by the way, if you have a partner who is not on board, who's a man, stop calling it gentle parenting. You're derailing the conversation before it ever starts. Call it anything else. Call it, I just read an article the other day in the course of doing the PhD program where they called it democratic parenting. Literally, I don't care what you call it. Don't call it gentle parenting because it's immediately defensive for men because they go, the world's not gentle, right? So here's the deal, right? The thing that I want to get across to anybody listening is even if they do nothing that I'm saying and all they do is do that emotional connection with their kid, they apologize and repair when they screw up. Maybe they still punish, but then they come back later and go, you know what? That was not effective. Dad didn't know in the moment what to do, and then I did this, and we're going to do better next time, right? Kids are so anti-fragile that if you do even half of what I'm going to say in my siblings book, you're going to have kids who are friends for life and who don't fight like cats and dogs every day. They're going to fight still. No matter if you do 100% of it, you're still going to fight. But they're not going to fight like cats and dogs all day, and they're going to be friends for life if you even do 25% of it. If you even emotionally attune to your child, and maybe Eli talked about this when she was on the pod, like 50% of the time with your child, they're going to be securely attached to you. If you even do effective discipline 30 to 40% of the time, even if the other stuff that you're doing is not as good, it's still going to work. And so that's the good news, is that we actually don't have to be perfect. We don't even have to be close to perfect. If we do 25 to 30% of the time, we do better than our impulse, we're probably going to be set. And then we're going to send them out into the world that is not gentle. But thankfully, kids don't need a gentle world. Kids are super resilient naturally. They're super able to process hard things. And we know that the main reason that they are is because they have a safe place to come back at home. And so just don't make your home the place where they're bullied. They're going to be bullied out there. And I don't ever hide my kids from hard stuff. I let them get bullied by their friends sometimes. I'm just there to pick up the pieces. I don't intervene. I'm like, that's okay. We can work through that. on the back end. And we can talk about how to leave toxic relationships as a result. That's an okay lesson to learn too.
I mean, there's just so much here. I could keep going and talking and talking.
We didn't even talk about all the school stuff. School is a whole nother thing. So we just need to make it a series. And I am so happy to be your dad parenting guy.
But oh my
like
God,
I said, 75% of the people are moms who follow me. So shout out to all the moms. I don't dislike
you. Yeah, we love the moms.
We love you. We love you. But there's so much content out there for you. Hopefully this can be content that you can share with your husband. And who knows? Maybe he'll make some changes.
I just love it. Well, thank you so much. This was so awesome. I'm so grateful and I'm so excited to continue to talk more about all these other subject matters that I need to dive deeper into with you. So thank you.
I'm so incredibly grateful for being here.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.